Something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that friends, pictures, profiles?
I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
The site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind. It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined.
Get left behind.
Let's sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and what you write as a check.
If you guys were the inventors of Facebook,
you'd have invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Did you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
This is our time.
You're being accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 5 of Film Gold. And today I am more than delighted to have Olivia Santasiao, my niece, on the podcast. How are you doing, Ol?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. Are you feeling excited about this?
I'm very excited, yeah.
Excellent.
I am.
All right. So today's film is The Social Network. So we found a nice compromise somewhere between Citizen Kane and Marvel. I don't know. You sent me a list of stuff, and I had seen this film already, and I just rewatched it, and I really liked it. So very happy to be doing this. Before we get into the film, you're a bit of a film buff, I understand.
I do like
Even
film.
Though we don't get to see each other very often nowadays, do we? But
aww.
We meet online.
Oh, yeah.
Social media, in fact, which is what we're going to talk about today. Before I trash social media, I should probably say that it is the reason that you and I and other people are able to meet without meeting in the flesh. So what's your history with films? Presumably when you were a kid, you watched children's films, but you remember like the first film that really got your attention?
Well, the big thing is I don't remember a lot of my childhood films. I know some people remember it like really well, but one that does stick out to me is The Incredibles. Distinctly remember seeing that like 3 times. Like, I had a little lunchbox that came when I bought from the cinema. I used to take that to school. But like, I absolutely love it. I still do. Like, I've rewatched it a few times as a bit older and I still love it. And I love the sequel. So there's a lot of Disney when I was young. Like, I like my High School Musical. Yeah, I like my Twilight. I mean, I'm not a complete stereotype, but I like my Twilight. I like my dystopian adaptations of stuff like Hunger Games. I like my musicals. I don't know, because this year with the pandemic and stuff, not a lot of films have been coming out. I've watched a lot of like concert films. So I've really enjoyed that because I think that's fun because can't go to concert, but I like my music as well. I like lots of different stuff. But ones that I've got a little list of sort of my favourites that sort of stick out to me.
Okay.
Love Actually, absolutely love that. I mean, La La Land, I absolutely adore. I've seen that so many times. I'd probably say, as I'm a bit older, that's sort of catapults you more into being into films. There's so much to it, and you, like, notice all the bits and bobs of it. So I remember distinctly when it was 2013, so I would have been year 10. The Great Gatsby, absolutely captivated by that. I love Baz Luhrmann's films, like Romeo and Juliet, Moulin Rouge, big ones for me as well. So I like lots of different films.
If you had to pick one genre, let's say, what would you say? I know you got like a big range, but
I'd probably say like a rom-com, because I think there's so much you can put into a rom-com. Like, it's not just one thing, and it's always, when it's a good one, very entertaining. Like, for example, like Love Actually, I think it's like one of the most perfect rom-coms. It's just got so much to it. I just love it.
And over the years, me and your mum have tried to get you into some of the stuff that we watched when we were kids, like 80s.
I have been watching 80s and stuff with her.
Have you ever seen When Harry Met Sally?
Yes, I absolutely. I think that is
really good. Yeah,
I absolutely love that. And like Dirty Dancing, love that.
Yeah, and your mum was obsessed with the Brat Pack when.
I've seen Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. Yeah.
Wow, so you got a lot going on. But I wanted to ask you, do you like any old black and white films?
I don't know. I just never seem to pick them up because I think these days, because like there's Netflix, there's Prime, and they're not on there, unless I'm not looking right, they're not on there as much. Like, I have watched some sort of modern black and white film, but like that's, I feel like those are different because they choose black and white deliberately, not just because you can only have it in black and white, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. When I say black and white films, I'm really saying old films. Obviously, there's lots of modern stuff that's done in black and white as well. But yeah, I'm talking about old.
No, yeah, I know what you mean. I don't not watch them deliberately. It's just because they're not readily available, I guess. So it's just, it's not even me being like, oh, I don't want to watch it. It's just, I just don't.
I'm just going to make a sort of generalization, say that people, I'm not asking you to speak for all millennials today, by the way.
Oh, God.
But I'd say modern audiences, I mean, even people in their 20s, I'd say, wouldn't be that interested in, say, a film from the 50s or the 60s. How do you think films have changed? Do you think everything's just much faster edited? And
well, I think as well, the idea of the 50s and the 60s, I feel like these days, people have different standards for like what's acceptable. Some stuff people will look back on, some people through their lens wouldn't be able to look at it and enjoy it because they'd be like, oh, this is racist, this is offensive, you can't say that now. So I think some people aren't able to sort of take themselves out of it. I mean, I can. So, like, for example, like Grease. I know 70s is dead old, but, like, I love Grease. I know it's, like, dated and whatever, but, like, sometimes a classic is a classic.
Mm.
But with films today, for example, Marvel, the sort of the coined phrase, like, the Marvel formula. So you can sort of, even though a lot of the Marvels are different, they've all the same producer. So they all sort of have the same style in a way, so like they know what films are going to get $1 billion revenue, so in that way I think money does motivate how films are made these days. But I still feel like today there is a wide variety of films you can get.
Well, the other thing I was getting at was I'd say like nowadays we have a shorter attention span.
Yeah, I definitely
don't have to wait very long for anything anymore, so I think older films, if you go back and watch them, it feels like there's not much happening. I think that's one of the other ones. But yeah, I mean, definitely like films reflect the time. So
100%. Quite
natural that things are going to seem out of date. But I'm pleased to hear you're watching a few old classics.
Yeah, I'm getting into the 80s a bit more now.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah, I love that.
Phenomenal. All right, so let's go on to today's film. So I'll just go through the particulars. So directed by David Fincher. Have you seen any other David Fincher films?
Gone Girl. Is that David Fincher?
Gone Girl, yes.
I think that's the only one.
Famous one, Seven.
No, I haven't seen that.
That's a really good film. The Game with Sean Penn. Fight Club. You must have heard about that.
I've heard of it, yeah.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which I didn't like at all, but I suppose it was entertaining. And then written by Aaron Sorkin, a great writer. As we're going to see as we get into this film, it's not actually based that much on reality. Quite a few major changes, but he's definitely a good writer. He became famous for The West Wing, which I haven't actually watched.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Do you watch series and films, or do you have any?
Yeah, well, I think at the minute, I've been more into my shows more than films, because I'm quite busy with work. Just fit them in a bit more round. I'll usually watch, like, maybe a film at the weekend. I've been more into my series, but I think, like, they say with, like, Netflix, because they drop them all in, like, one go, like, 10 episodes. It's like a long film anyway. You watch it all in one go. Yeah, I'm a bit more into series now, but I still like my films, obviously, so yeah.
Well, the verb binge watch was invented in about the last 10 years, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think my record was when I got into, I don't know if you ever heard of Mad Men. Have you ever heard of
that? Heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, I think I watched 12 episodes in one day. It's my record.
Oh, no, yeah, I know what that's like.
They get addictive, don't they? Yeah. So, yeah, Aaron Sorkin. And then the main actors, we've got Jesse Eisenberg. I actually knew Jesse Eisenberg before this film for a film called Roger Dodger. It's not very well known at all, but I'd really recommend it. It's a great film.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, he's a bit younger because I think that was 2003. So that's 7 years before this. But he's much more meek in that film. He plays the nephew of an ad executive who's very sort of charismatic and a bit of a ladies' man. So he's sort of a foil for him. And we've got Andrew Garfield, we've got Justin Timberlake, of course, famous as a musician. What boy band was he in?
NSYNC.
NSYNC, that's it. I knew that. I've got all their albums. Oh, and the other one, Armie Hammer. Call me stupid, but while I was watching this film, it didn't register that it was the same face for both of those actors.
No, well, they digitally edited him on.
I know. Is it right that they had another actor and then they CGI'd his face?
Yeah, they did. It's a model called Josh Pence.
That's it.
He's actually in the film. Like, he has like a 2-second cameo.
I think Aaron Sorkin's in the film as well.
Yeah, he's in it as well.
Yeah, he pops up.
I found out that to play the twins, they did 10 months in twin boot camp, whatever that means.
I think they split screened some of it as well. So I think some of it was the body of Armie Hammer was both of the, I'm going to call them the Winklevi, because I love
Winklevi, I've heard that.
Love that, brilliant. Yeah, so that was quite interesting. It's more that I didn't think of it. I didn't go, oh, that must be two actors. But I suppose there are identical twins out there.
Yeah, he's definitely not a twin, though. He's definitely two people.
Yeah. 3 Oscars, screenplay, score, and editing. 3 Golden Globes. Best film drama. So I suppose in the Golden Globes,
They split it,
right. Drama, director, screenplay, and score based on the book The Accidental Billionaires, which I haven't read. Have you read any of that book, or do you know about that book?
No, but I found out about that book.
Go on.
So Eduardo Saverin, the real person, he was actually a consultant on the book.
Mm.
I read something that said, like another bit that isn't actually true, is that, because the film presents Eduardo as the victim, I think.
Absolutely.
Because that adds up to the fact that he was the consultant, because according to something I found, that he actually ran unauthorized ads on Facebook for his own startup company. So sort of the way that the film presents that he was sort of cut out of the company, he was sort of ousted out of it for like not actually helping the company, if that makes sense. He was running these ads and sort of going off on his own. So it's just more about how it's not completely true.
Yeah, we're going to get onto the reality of it. But yeah, that was one of the big things, wasn't it? A bit suspicious that he was a script advisor. And the other thing, though, you'll know that films need devices. So it's very rare that a film will absolutely follow a true story. And you've heard of the podcast, haven't you? History by Hollywood.
Yeah. I went on a similar website for that.
Yeah, there's one called Based on True Story as well, which is quite good. Really good idea. Like, it's a podcast that takes you scene by scene and tells you what the reality was. But, you know, things like in films, they often condense characters. So, you know, if you're making a film about there's one about Titanic, not the James Cameron, an earlier one, probably the James Cameron as well, because you've got loads of crew on a boat. It's much easier to just turn them into 3 characters. And the other thing you need in any film is you need tension and you need conflict. So they kind of pit Eduardo against Sean Parker. Another thing that wasn't real was Sean Parker wasn't such a playboy, apparently.
No.
But you kind of need that. So it's a good device to have a playboy who's got loads of front and got loads of chat. And he naturally conflicts with a guy who just wants to do the best for the company, blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
Very well-known stuff. Oh, was there anything else about the book there?
Not that I found, but on this website, I think it's called like Chasing the Frog, I think it was called. There's another book called The Facebook Effect. Well, that was their source for like the facts, but I haven't actually read it. The fact that it's not completely true, I don't think that's like a make or break at all, because it's not like about friendship in the digital age more than anything else. I think that's why it holds up so much. If it was just like a biopic about Facebook, it wouldn't be as captivating, I don't think. Like, if it was just the straight facts, if that makes sense.
Mm. Social Network was voted, it was part of a poll that the BBC did to find the best films of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And it was number 27. Now, have you seen any David Lynch films? Have you heard of David Lynch?
I've heard of him, but I don't think he'd be my thing.
Right, maybe not, no. Mulholland Drive was voted number one, the best films of the 21st century. Let's talk about this script, because I think the thing that it does really well is that it doesn't dumb down all the tech stuff, but you don't have to really know much about it to follow what's going on. How important is a script in a film, would you say?
Well, I think with the script for The Social Network, it definitely keeps the pace, because there's so much dialogue and it's focused so quickly. It creates like such a fast-paced film, which just makes it so exciting. But yeah, the script's important, because if the dialogue's bad or it's just not written well. It can definitely affect the film because the acting can be so good. If like what they're saying is like a load of rubbish, like the film's not going to be good.
Yeah, it's a script plus the pacing. It's brilliantly. Yeah. I mean, I think it won an Oscar. Did I just say for editing?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it's edited brilliantly because it has to straddle that line between a bunch of geeks doing a lot of techie stuff and then a fast-moving modern film. One of the ways they got around it, I think the other thing that wasn't quite real, it wasn't such a party atmosphere. You know, when they
moved. No, I've read that as well.
When they moved to California, it's like, people doing bongs and, just this like, it's this fast-paced party where they're getting loads of stuff done. And what was that party they have later on? They have to do a shot every time. What was it?
Oh, the intern bit, where they're trying to get a new intern.
Yeah, and they have to do shots and everything. So I don't think it quite. I think it was a bit more mundane than that. But like you said, if you just made a film about that, it'd be pretty boring. So
yeah,
you have to give them a bit of artistic license. But I'll just go very quickly through the plot. So basically, Mark Zuckerberg is dumped by Erica, who again wasn't real. I think Mark Zuckerberg had been rejected by somebody rather than dumped by his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He creates FaceMash, which is comparing women in terms of attractiveness. He crashes part of the Harvard network and gets 6 months academic probation. The Winklevi, who are these rowers from a very well-heeled family, they recruit him to create the Harvard Connection, which is basically a dating site, really, a social media site based on dating. But Mark Zuckerberg stalls them for months and meanwhile is creating the Facebook with Eduardo Saverin. Sean Parker appears, as we said earlier. He's supposed to be the founder of Napster. Again, I think the reality is that he was very good at recognizing the potential in an idea and then developing it. Is that about right?
Yeah, I guess so. He's that ideas person.
Yeah, but I don't think he started Napster from the ground. Anyway, then we get this sort of conflict. So he's starting to woo Mark Zuckerberg away. And the way the Mark Zuckerberg character, he's almost like a bit of a blank slate. He doesn't seem to have much of a personality. So he's
shaped by others.
Yeah, maybe. Shaped by others and quite easy to influence, perhaps. So they move to California. As we said, there's this party atmosphere going on. They expand to Europe. The Winklevi are at Henley Regatta. And I used to go to Henley College, in fact, so I recognized all that. They didn't let me in the regatta, though. So the Winklevi sue Mark Zuckerberg. Peter Thiel, who was involved with PayPal, makes what they call an angel investment at $500,000.
Yeah.
Eduardo's shares, by something that happens in the contract, they're diluted down to 0.03% from something like 30%. Sean Parker's busted for drugs. We'll talk about the last scene a bit later, but basically Zuckerberg is being sued by Eduardo and sued by the Winklevi. And the film does quite a clever thing. It intercuts between the lawsuits, or essentially telling the story. So let's talk about Jesse Eisenberg. So what do you think of the Mark Zuckerberg character? We'll talk about the reality in a sec.
Well, I think I read someone called him an anti-hero. Because, like, for example, at the end, towards the end with the party scene, Sean rings him up and he's, like, not very happy with how things have gone. I don't think he intended things to go as wrong as he did. I don't know. I think it represents sort of toxic internet culture in a way. He gets rejected by Erica and then his response is to be horrible to her as if it's her fault. He was rude to her. So I think that says a lot to how some people behave today in certain situations.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later on for sure, this cyberbullying thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you'll probably know better than me, but some of the stories I've heard are just absolutely horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of weirdly charismatic. I think because the script is so good, he gets so many good lines, you see. So the fact that he's given so many good lines makes his character seem charismatic. But, I mean, the first scene, perhaps we could talk about that. I mean, some of the lines there, that's become quite a classic scene, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Famous line, he says, you're going to think girls don't like you because you're a geek, but it's actually because you're an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
One of the other things is that actually Zuckerberg met his wife around the same time as the film is happening.
She was actually in the dinner when they go to the Chinese restaurant in real life. The girlfriend was with him.
Oh, is that when Sean Parker's taken?
Yeah. When they meet Sean, like in real life, the girlfriend Priscilla was there.
Yeah. Again, they sort of present Zuckerberg as, I don't know, maybe a little bit more interested in tech than women, perhaps.
He doesn't really know how to talk to women in like a proper way.
Yeah, and he's quite socially inept. I mean, some people even said that character could even be on the spectrum, of the Asperger's or autism spectrum. I didn't really get that. I think it's more just being a bit socially awkward. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
What about Justin Timberlake as an actor?
It's all right, I guess.
No,
so I've never been massive on Justin Timberlake, to be fair.
Mm. Well, as I told you earlier, I listen to his music every day. So.
Oh, yeah.
No, I thought he's pretty good, yeah. He's good in, there's another film called Inside Llewyn Davis. I mean, I'm a musician, as you know. It's about the folk scene in the early 60s. He's pretty good in that. So I think
I've heard of that, yeah.
What else have we got? What about the music?
Oh, the music's really good. Really good score.
Is it the kind of music that you notice, or is it good because you don't notice it? Compliment.
A bit of both, really. Like, it sets the tone. Like, for example, in the Hall of the Mountain King and the rowing scene, I think that adds to it. Like, that's very distinctive and memorable. I think it's called Hand Covers Bruise at the beginning, and that's played throughout. The music that's played at the beginning, the score, like, it's memorable, but it's still quite subtle. And sometimes scores can be in your face, like noisy, to sort of add to, like maybe an action movie or something. It's a big component of it, but I think this is in the background, but it's still recognizable. Like, I could say if someone played it, I'd know what it's from.
Yeah, well, there's differences between a score and a soundtrack, because a soundtrack will be songs. I mean, did they use any songs that were already out there, do you know? Or was it more of a score, this one?
Well, there's a Beatles song.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that, yeah. That was your audition for coming on the programme.
Oh, yeah. I read that Elvis Costello's Beyond Belief was originally, that's what they wanted to open the film with.
Oh, okay.
That song. But I think it's more about the score in this film. I know some films are propelled by soundtrack more than the score, but I think it's more score for this film.
Yeah, and it was done by Trent Reznor, who was in Nine Inch Nails, which is a band that I loved in the 90s. It doesn't really sound like Nine Inch Nails, because their stuff is atmospheric, but it's much heavier and it's much darker. This is not really dark. It's, how would we describe it? It's
foreboding, maybe?
Yeah, it's got this sort of piano thing that's very sad. It gives a sadness to the whole thing, I think.
Yeah, especially at the beginning, the one at the beginning.
Mm,
yeah. The Handcuffs Bruise.
Yeah, they bring that in and it brings a big sadness to the whole thing. Isn't really, because in reality, no one came out of this too badly.
Well, actually, I read that it wasn't actually 0.03. It was actually like just less than 10. But still, when you think about that, because Facebook's so big, that's still like millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's getting sold out of like a small company. He's going to have no money. So it's like, it's hard to feel sorry for people completely when you break it down to reality.
Yeah. So this last scene, as I said, we get Baby You're a Rich Man by the Beatles coming up, which of course elevates the film massively. I'm just joking. You know, I'm a Beatles fan. One thing that's interesting, you get the text on the screen saying, oh, they settled for however many million with the Winkles on. And obviously the last scene is Mark Zuckerberg sends a friend request to his ex-girlfriend, who again, as we said, didn't really exist. And he keeps refreshing it. And that would be a really good lead in to talk about social media in general. But it's funny that as he's doing that, it comes up, you know, Mark Zuckerberg became the youngest billionaire ever. So like he's a billionaire, he's successful. But in other ways, in this film, he's a sad man, like, or boy really, sitting in his chair, refreshing his Facebook page.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's not reality, but that's a brilliant idea.
It's a good ending for sure.
Yeah. All right. What other bits were not real? Have you got anything there?
Well, little details. It's not shot at Harvard. It's shot at Johns Hopkins University.
Yeah, Johns Hopkins, yeah, that's right. The stuff we mentioned, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, I said, met his wife. Sean Parker was a bit different. The one you mentioned earlier, which is really big, you know, Eduardo Saverin was actually using Facebook to advertise for other startups.
And also just little things, not like, well, obviously, Andrew Garfield isn't, I don't think he's Brazilian. Right. Max Minghella isn't actually Indian. They like put brown face makeup on him, which is a bit controversial, you could say.
Oh, they actually use brown face makeup?
Yeah, he's not actually of Indian descent, Max Minghella. He's not as dark skinned as he is in the film, in real life. So, I don't know, that's just little things. And then, for example, another little thing I found out is the bit after when they go to the fraternity, the Caribbean party, and they're still outside. When they're like, Dragon's Breath is digitally added in. Some of the stuff I found that was actually true is, for example, he did drop out of Harvard. He did upload the music program sign-ups for free. And then the Association of Harvard Black Women complained about Face Mash, but then later on Mark Zuckerberg made them a website. And he said he regrets showing up to that meeting in his pajamas.
Say that again? I didn't hear that.
You know, when he goes to that Case Equity meeting and he's in his pajamas, Sean told him. Apparently, that did happen, but Mark Zuckerberg regrets it.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I think it's the whole thing about it not being true. It's more sensationalized, making more interesting. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, in some cases, with biopics and stuff, making it not true can be offensive. It depends who it is, really. Like, for example, I don't know, with Rocket Man about Elton John, that's presented as a fantasy deliberately. Because Elton John was producer on it as well. So that's sort of bending the truth and how things work deliberately. But then in other cases, like, I think it's a David Bowie movie recently came out that people complained about because it's like offensive, because not true, and like the family wasn't consulted. I don't know, it's just with biopics, you've got to be careful because sometimes changing it can work, sometimes it can be offensive.
Yeah, obviously, if you're dealing with a person and you're sort of character assassinating them, that's pretty serious. Or if you're dealing with a war and you're changing details and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think Titanic, not only did they insert a love story into it, which is fair enough, I suppose, but they changed some details. Like they had one of the officers on the ship shooting passengers, which very contentious, and then shooting himself, which... there was a rumor that there were shots fired, but yeah, you got to be a bit careful. But I haven't seen Rocket Man. Is that good in general?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Yeah, because I love Elton John, so I loved it.
Oh, excellent. Well, as a Beatles fan, I haven't even seen Yesterday yet.
That was all right. I think Mum liked that. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to catch up. Have you seen any interviews of the real Mark Zuckerberg? Have you ever heard him speak and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he was in a bit of controversy a few years ago about like data. Actually, no, I did see a little interview of him sort of talking about the film, and he sort of said, it was just like code in our computer. So he seemed just like a normal guy, just wanted to like make something. I don't think it was as extreme as it's presented in the film.
He seemed a bit more, I don't know, confident or maybe eloquent. I mean, Jesse Eisenberg plays brilliantly. He creates a character that's really good.
Yeah.
But he plays him as a kind of, I don't know what to say, I think sociopathic is a bit strong, but a little bit antisocial. But you know the stuff where he's in the lawsuit, you know, they're trying to talk to him. He says, it's raining outside. I just took that as all kind of the arrogance of youth. And he's clearly, you know, I don't know whether you'd call him a genius, but obviously he had.
Is in a way.
He had something, you know, got high IQ and everything. So I think the character just likes outsmarting all these, particularly adults, because he's supposed to be
15
or something.
He knows he's better. He thinks he's better than them. When he's like, he says about, he could turn the Phoenix room into his ping pong room or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just sort of like a young punk genius. I think someone said something like that before. It's very mixed characters, a lot to say about it.
There's some great lines though from the film. I just wrote a couple down. They're talking about expanding to Europe and they say, Bosnia doesn't have roads, but it's got Facebook.
Yeah.
And I think it's Sean Buck says, we lived on farms, we lived in cities, and now we're going to live on the internet. I mean, this is 10 years ago. I imagine the script was started before then, maybe a year before or something. So they kind of make predictions. Probably more or less come true, really.
Yeah, but I think I would say now, like Facebook, I don't think Facebook's nearly as popular as it was at the start. I remember when I was in, I was like 13 and I was finally allowed to have it. I was so excited. But like now I barely go on it. I use it more for, obviously, like the free messenger's very good and like it's good for groups to sort of communicate stuff like that. Like I use it for work, but like, I don't use it as a social media platform. I never post on it. I can't really be bothered.
Right.
I don't think it's as popular as it was sort of at the start.
So how old were you when you first started? You said 13, right?
Yeah, because that's when you were, because I know people used to like lie about their age to get on it, but I had to wait till I was old enough.
Right. I think I went back actually and looked. I think I started in 2007.
Did you? No, I was a bit after that.
And I was very gung-ho at the beginning. Like I was, because it's that attention thing, isn't it? It's like,
oh, yeah, that's what all social media is about, attention.
Yeah, but we're going to get onto that in 2 seconds. Just this thing that it's sort of exposed about people in general. And the funny thing is that, you know, obviously there's children using Facebook and social media, but there's adults. And in some ways they behave quite similarly. Like,
oh, God, yeah.
I'm sure there's more than one adult who would admit to doing what Mark Zuckerberg does at the end of the film, like refreshing their page and waiting for, you know, responses as well. So, yeah, what I'd like to do is chat about social media. So we're sort of broaden it out a little bit to Twitter and all the other ones that I've heard of. And well, I know about Twitter, but all these other ones like Snapchat and TikTok that I've heard of, but I don't know anything about. So I'd say social media and smartphones has really been the biggest thing of the 21st century, probably along with 9/11 and terrorism.
Yeah.
Quite different, but I'd say those two things are probably the biggest social is not a great word.
Social issue sort of thing.
Yeah, social. I was going to say social events, but I wouldn't call a terrorist attack a social event.
No. Know.
Not very good. Yeah, I mean, you have to marvel at like the design of everything, the way the colors are designed and the way that people are targeted. Now, at what point did you maybe realize that we were essentially, Facebook is really an exercise in us giving our data away for free?
Yeah, everything's controlled. So, see, like, you'll maybe like something on another page and it'll come up on your Facebook and like everything's completely targeted. But on like Instagram, your explore page is shaped by the stuff you've liked. You're like, oh, I mean, like when you see some, like that's a big thing with TikTok as well. Like there's the For You page and it literally is for you. Like the stuff on there is stuff that it only knows you like, which is a bit creepy, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel you wouldn't want to use anything if you thought about it too much, that it's taking all your data. I mean, it's something to be concerned about. Like, you should definitely be careful, but it's just like, in the end of that, it's just one of those things.
So what's it tapping into? Because we all know that, but we're still doing it. So is it because, I don't know, do they know something about us that we don't know, perhaps?
So everything's tracked. Like, if you download an app, I feel like in some ways it knows what you do on your phone. I feel like, if you read all the fine print, it probably says that if you open a website on your phone, your Twitter could tap into that in a way. I don't know that for certain, but I feel like there's a lot more to it because no one reads the small print. That's the thing. No one sits and reads 200 pages of terms and conditions.
Well, it's the same with government documents. Yeah, there's these trade deals that go through and they're 20,000 pages. I mean, who could...
Yeah, who's got time?
even if it was interesting, who could possibly read... What politician could possibly have time to read 20,000 pages? But no, I know what you mean. And their argument is, yeah, but we're telling you what we're doing. You know what we're doing. We know what they're doing. We know they're taking our data. We know we're giving it away for free, but we're still doing it.
It's just how things are. Like, you can't function. I'm not saying you can't function without social media. That's definitely not true.
Oh, that's a controversial statement, ladies and gentlemen.
No. I don't know. Well, like, I'd say when I was younger, I used to I'd use it more, but like I only use it now as like a way to communicate. I use it to talk to my best friend in Australia. That's what I use Twitter for, more so than just to actually tweet, because I can't be bothered anymore. I used to be really bothered. Like, I used to be on it all the time, but I don't anymore. I just talk to Ty now.
It's fantastic for advertising my podcast, because I've got three podcasts including this one. I can't tell you how great it is for that, because you're just reaching people so easily.
Yeah.
But it's, you have to be a bit wary of things which are too convenient. You know, there's an expression, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So
right,
anything
yeah.
that's convenient and just seems too good to be true almost certainly is. You know, advertising and things like that, they do tap our subconscious. So I wasn't even joking when I said earlier, they probably know more about us than we do.
Yeah.
You know, because the majority of people wouldn't really analyze their behavior particularly. So they just do it, you know, and these people know. You know, like you say, this thing that developed where they know what you've been looking at, so they target stuff.
I've got a good example about that.
Yeah, go on.
So like with Netflix, the way with Netflix is, for one show, there'll be about five different thumbnails. So there might be one where there's the actress's face or an actor or like a landscape. So Netflix picks up on what you more like to click on. So there's someone did it where they'd only click on thumbnails where like you could see like the actor's face, so then all the thumbnails will be about that, so it like picks up exactly what you like, so it knows how to target you in a way so for you to pick certain things. Like say if they wanted a show, some Netflix original, and they knew you click on stuff that's got like an actress's face, like you might pick something that's got a woman's face on it, they'd use that thumbnail to get you to click on it.
Yeah, in many ways it's great because it's, you know, you go on your YouTube feed and you've got all this stuff that they know you like, and it's great.
Yeah.
You can't deny that it's very convenient, but there's a price as well. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. There's a TED Talk by Cal Newport about why you don't need social media. And, you know, it's one side of an argument. Another thing, we heard this thing called FOMO.
Yes.
Fear of missing out. Yeah, that's another thing that kind of fits into it. So I think social media quite ruthlessly targets, you know, insecurities like that, you know?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But, you know, on Facebook, there's this big party going on that I'm not involved in. And if I don't log on for a day, like, oh, imagine all this fun I'm going to miss out, you know?
But yeah.
This great party. Yeah, one of the things I was reading was apparently the average age of people, of users of Facebook, has gone up quite considerably. So I think...
Oh, definitely.
Like you're saying, like people of your age group. Do you mind me telling people your age?
Or go for it. I'm 23.
And not representing all millennials.
Definitely not.
So you're in your 20s and I'm in my 40s, basically. So, yeah, I think the average age has gone up because there's a lot of people of my age group and even my parents, your grandparents' age group, who can look up old friends from school and stuff. You know, and like you say, it's great for that. You know, I occasionally enjoy checking in, seeing what people I haven't spoken to for 20 years are doing. But I think it's one of those things where you can use it to your advantage.
I guess so.
If you log on and you're advertising a podcast or you're checking in with somebody, if you just spend 5 minutes, it's not so bad. But would you agree that, like, if you spend like half an hour, an hour on it?
Yeah, I just don't like Facebook anymore. I just don't care for it. I can't bother with it, really.
Yeah.
For example, like Instagram, like I've never really been an Instagram person. Like, I don't feel the need to, I'm not judging anyone who does, obviously not, but like I've never felt the need to take pictures of like everything I'm doing. Like when I go on holiday, I wouldn't post 20 pictures of my holiday. Like that's just not me. I'm not judging people who do, but like I've never been one to display everything I do. Like I sort of use Twitter in the way you said, you use Facebook to like look up other people. I use it to talk to people I can't talk to face-to-face, in a way.
It is in our control. That's the other thing. As you were saying, it is becoming more difficult. Like, for example, if we just take technology in general, it's very difficult not to have an email address, okay?
Oh, yeah, you need it for everything.
Yeah, it gets very difficult to do that. And then it kind of goes in stages, because I'm an English teacher, as you know, and actually, the reason I got a smartphone, I probably would have got one eventually, but I was very late to the party, so to speak, was because my school sends emails to everybody saying, yeah, oh, we have a new student. And then basically the first teacher who gets in there gets the gig, gets the job.
Yeah.
So when I didn't have a smartphone, I'd get home in the evening. It's unbelievable now to think that, you know, you'd have to wait all day to check your email. But there was something great about it, to be honest. I'd get home and I'd just see all these emails of all these classes that, of course, are gone. So I had to get one, really, to work. So it gets to a point where you kind of need to have these things. But like I say, it is in our control. You know, you don't have to spend a long time on it.
Oh, definitely not. I feel like in this day and age, as you said, a smartphone is sort of an essential. Because, again, a similar example I saw, it was someone who took a picture of their older relative who had sort of an older phone. And they had a email about getting a I think it was like a COVID test or something. Mm. It was like, or getting booked in for their vaccine. And like that, this girl had to do is sort of copy and paste it onto her phone. So like it can be in like not life or death. I'm not saying that, but it is something you do need. But like you can sort of just use it for the bare essentials, like your smartphone. You don't have to have everything that a smartphone can do on a smartphone. Sometimes you could just strip it back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, they used to make a joke about, I mean, this is going way back, mobile phones. Again, I was really late to mobile phones. A lot of my friends had them in the 90s, and I got mine in about 2001 or two, something like that.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons people got mobile phones was that if you had an emergency, like if you were a child, I mean, perhaps children shouldn't have mobile phones, but that's another story. But a young person, if you had a phone, you got in trouble, you could call your parents, or if you broke down or something in the middle of nowhere. But because then you got caller ID, yeah. And the irony was that then a lot of young people would probably, when they saw it was their parents calling them, wouldn't answer.
Yeah,
that was a quite ironic thing. So all these things, they have good functions, but then like mobile phones are taken to the extremes, like as you say, with smartphones, people who just absolutely live on them, you know. And like I say, it's not even young people as well. I know people in their 40s and 50s seem to spend their life on the internet and just post, as you said, like 110 photos from their holidays. Like, all right, fine. I think 5 photos will like set the scene, you know, but
yeah,
you just like post them endlessly. So I think we'd all agree, well, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I think we'd agree that there's obviously positives to social media, but Let's look at a few of the negatives. So I saw a Twitter video, right, the other day. It was a woman, for those who don't know, it's a woman called Justine Sacco, who was a PR lady in New York. She got on a plane and she tweeted, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS," which was a very misguided thing to do. I think there was some joke attached to it. She was obviously trying to be ironic. So she turned off her phone. When she landed, she opened her phone. There was like hundreds and hundreds of messages. And obviously people had taken offense to this. But did you read some of the messages on the screen though when I sent you that video?
Yeah, it was like, "Has Justine landed yet?" or something like that.
Yeah, but no, I mean, there was just awful stuff like, "I can't wait to see your face when you check your effing phone." It was,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and there was misogynist stuff. There was all kinds. But I think the most upsetting thing about it is that I think social media has unleashed all this anger and this nastiness.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Must have been there anyway. But what was most shocking was people just delighting in her misery, basically. And I think she lost her job. She was socially
ostracized. Oh, you can definitely lose your job over stuff like that.
Yeah, she was socially ostracized. How much of a problem is cyberbullying? How much of that have you been aware of?
Oh, gosh, you hear horrible stories about stuff like, I don't know, there used to be that site that was quite popular called Ask.fm, where you could literally anonymously just send stuff to people. Like you could message them anything. You could say something horrible. People have, like, killed themselves over stuff like that. So it's just, I think this thing of social media, you have such easy access to people. Mm. So, like, if something you wouldn't say to someone's face, you can just type it to them. A person, if they wanted to be a cyberbully, they can easily just track someone down, like track down the Facebook, message them and say something really mean. That couldn't proper affect people. So yeah, there's definitely been cases of people harming themselves over it.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard these things about Instagram. Like, sometimes it's bullying, but sometimes it's even just people making fun. You know, you post a photo that's supposed to be funny and everyone makes fun of you. And I didn't grow up in the age where I was a young person with Instagram, so I never really had that. I did exist in a time before all this. And it must be difficult because it must be like, you know, imagine you post a photo of it and you get 100 people all taking the piss out of you, as we'd say, you know.
Oh, God, that happens to loads of people all the time.
It's not quite the same, but it's a bit like having 100 real people all gathering around you, like making fun of you. I mean,
the thing is with it, like, if you had to do it in person, you wouldn't do it. That's what I think.
Exactly.
Like, you had to, if you saw someone post something and you didn't like it, and you had, the only way you could be horrible to them is to go around to their house and yell at them, like, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, have you ever seen those videos where it says what Facebook behavior would look like in real life?
Yeah, I've seen a video like that. Brilliant. It's crazy.
I'll try and find them and put them in the show notes, but they're hilarious. It's like you go around someone's house and you show them like 100 photos and like you go like, "Oh, look at this," you know.
I've seen similar stuff to that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Brilliant. Because we all think that we're so rational, don't we? And then it's not until someone points it out you realize how like crazy it is. I mean, trying to think about what's actually happening, and what it is that social media can turn a normal person into a celebrity, basically. Celebrity within like a fairly small kind of bubble. But let's say you've got like 500 or even 1,000 Facebook friends. You become a sort of celebrity within that 500 people, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all hanging on your every post. So you've got the power of a celebrity, but then you've got what celebrities have in reality, which is that everyone knows them or thinks they know them. They know stuff about them. You know, some horrendous stuff that happens to celebrities. It sounds like it's so great being famous and everything. So what's happening is that we can all be famous in our own way, but then we get all the pitfalls of that.
Thing is, when you're under that light, your digital footprint will go everywhere. So like you'll have celebrities who, when they were 15, tweeted something inappropriate or problematic. Then their fans will like dig it up and be like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you said this." And then they have to apologize. So it's like, I think social media can hold people accountable for stuff they didn't even realize they could be held accountable for.
Retro shaming, is that what it's called?
Maybe. Or like, it also links to like sort of cancel culture. So that if someone does one thing, that can be like the end of their career. And sometimes that's rightly so. Yeah. But it's like, for example, like sort of this links to Justin Timberlake actually. Something with him and Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl, like she's the one who got blamed for it when she like grabbed, he's the one who grabbed her. So it's sort of like one little thing can like ruin your career, especially with social media, the stuff can spread. For example, you could see a celebrity on the street and maybe they're maybe there's like a bad fan interaction, they could have had a bad day, they'll like kind of upload it, then everyone will see it and be like, oh my gosh, they're so horrible. Like, that happens a lot because you can film, like, people film everything. So like there's nowhere to hide, even like a private moment. Everything can just spread.
Yeah, the past can become the present, like your whole life. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a podcast about John Lennon. Again, I don't follow these things generally, but what my guests often tell me is that, you know, like history is always revised. History is always changing, like our perceptions of it. And John Lennon, when he was in his early 20s, there's some video of him making fun of handicapped people. It was a weird thing that he used to do, and he did it even in concert a couple of times. Also, we know that he mistreated his first son, Julian.
Right.
But for a variety of reasons, you know, he was a world-famous Beatle. He was in his 20s. They were being worked very hard. And when he came home, he didn't really have time for his son, and he totally regretted it. It was also known that he may have hit Cynthia Lennon, possibly only once or twice. Other people said he did it to other women. But that's now been revised. So John Lennon is now a wife beater.
Yeah, that's literally what happened.
He makes fun of the handicap. That's almost become all he is. And the problem is that I'm just using him as an example because I do a podcast and I know about him. But
yeah,
one bit of information is then taken to, as you said, like encompass the whole thing.
And I know, like you forget about the good things that person might have done. It's because they just one mistake. Because especially someone might have will apologize for it. And they, like the thing is, like a celebrity can make a mistake, and then people will be like, oh, they can't change. That's the thing. Like someone can make a comment 5 years ago and then show that they've changed. And then like some people will realize that and be able to move on, but then other people just hang on to the past.
Yeah, they call it the court of public opinion. Yeah. But nowadays you see the public have all got access, and you can, you know, on Twitter, for example, you can communicate directly with a celebrity, a famous person. And of course it makes us feel good. It kind of gives us revenge. It's the same way, you know, we make fun of politicians, policemen, because they've got power over us. So celebrities is a similar thing. You know, a lot of people are jealous of them. So it's a way of revenge. But what you were saying earlier about one incident, you've heard of Derren Brown, right?
The magician.
Yeah, yeah. I read his book years ago, and I think this is even, maybe even be before social media or in the early stages. And he told a story. I don't remember the exact details, but it was something like he was in a cafe and he was late for a meeting. And he suddenly realized, oh, you know, I've got to get out. I'm late for a meeting. He rushed out the door. And as someone was coming in, they said, oh, hi, Derren, or something like that. You know, a fan of his or whatever. And he rushed out of this cafe, whatever it was.
Oh, did he ignore the fan?
Yeah, he ignored him. Like, but he ignored him just because he was like late for a meeting that was possibly going to cost him.
Oh, yeah. People, I bet the people twisted it.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if they did, but what Derren Brown said in the book is that it's very possible that that one person will say, oh, who's in the pub, is going to say, oh, I met that Derren Brown today and that bastard ignored me, you know. Oh, he must be so arrogant. You know, he's going to tell like 10 people. They're going to tell everyone from their office, oh, my friend saw Derren Brown and he ignored him. God, what an arrogant celebrity. It's going to spread from like one person to potentially.
Oh, yeah, everything spreads.
You know, and I think that was before social media really became so prominent. So now it's the same, but like times a thousand, you know.
Yeah, because if that happened today, someone would like film it and they'd be like, oh my gosh, Derren Brown's horrible. Yeah. And then it'd be like on the Daily Mail or something.
Oh, unbelievable. All right. So just to finish on this, what do you think is the future? Is there going to be a backlash on social media? Oh, sorry, a backlash about social media? Or is this thing just going to carry on?
Well, things will phase in and phase out. I think social media will be around, but it'll be different ones. Example, and I don't use Snapchat anymore. I used to love it. I don't anymore. There's been ones that have left, like, you know, I wasn't on MySpace, so that's before me, but like stuff like MySpace, it's like stuff that everything just develops. So there'll always be social media, but it'll just be in a different way. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon, especially because it's such a good way to communicate with people, especially at the minute with what's going on.
Yeah, so I suppose anyone listening to this, and it's very difficult. I mean, I can't put myself in the mind of a 15-year-old who everyone at their school uses it and there's pressure to post. Yeah, I'm under no pressure, but can you remember, like, I don't know, cast your mind back to when you were 15, 16, yeah? Was there pressure to use it? Was there pressure to post stuff? Or were you ostracized if you didn't do that? Or?
Well, not for me, because the sort of friends I had, that was never a thing, but I can understand for others it might be, because I think everyone's different. I've always been someone that if I'm not like everyone else, that doesn't really bother me. I know that sounds so cheesy, but like I'll do what I want to do. And if I didn't personally feel too much pressure to post anything. It's just never been me. Like that's why I don't really post on Facebook that much. I don't really post on that much. I just use it to talk to people I want to talk to.
But that pressure exists though, doesn't it? For sure.
Oh gosh, yeah, for others. Not I don't want to say I'm not like other girls, but I'm not saying that. But like there definitely is that pressure. Like some people definitely feel it, but I personally am not too bothered.
Yeah, we just want to leave the audience with some kind of an inspirational message that is to a large extent or a general extent in your control, in one's control.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, okay. Right, would you like to make any closing comments about this film or anything else, social media? We're recommending this film, yeah?
I love it. I've seen it loads of times.
Mm. I mean, presumably they've already seen it if they're listening to us talking about it. But perhaps they've seen it once and then they might want to revisit it. So I think it's definitely worthy. And it's one of those films, I think, that each time you watch it, there is something else in there for you, you know?
Because I remember actually Nonu gave me the DVD. It was from like the Maidenhead Library all those years ago. First. I watched it, I didn't fully get it. I enjoyed it, but I didn't like fully get it. But then you've got to watch it a couple of times to like proper get it. But definitely it's a lot to it. I think it's very clever, like the way it's about Facebook, but it's also about like loads more. And it's just The dialogue's so good. Like it's little bits that's really funny or really clever. I just think it's really good.
I mean, I'm a little bit of a writer. I had a blog. I know you do some writing as well, but script writing really is a little bit undervalued unless there's loads of classic lines. It's almost like one of those things that doesn't really get noticed so much, but this script is so good. I mean, it won for screenplays, isn't it? Of course, yeah.
I think it has got classic lines for like people within the film community. Like the my Prada's at the cleaners is a personal favourite. And like Dakota Johnson's character says, like, what are you a preneur of?
Oh, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and then they say you can rub three friends together to make a fourth.
That's it, yeah.
It's stuff like that. I think it's a steadfast day, like, in a clever way.
The editing helps as well, because then...
Yeah, just so quick, but it's, like, dense as well. Like, there's so much dialogue. It's wall-to-wall dialogue, but I like that. I think it's just really good.
Yeah, and that first scene really sets the scene as well. Some great lines in that, the one I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. And I think for social media, it definitely has its highs and lows. Like I've seen some awful stuff on there. But like without social media, like there's people I wouldn't be friends with now who I hold very dear. Can I give it a little shout out?
Yeah, of course you can.
No, I'll give a little shout out to my best friend, Ty, who I met on social media. And we've been friends for ages now. And I absolutely adore him. So I just thought I'd say a little shout out. Because like that's something that's good about social media. You meet people you wouldn't usually meet, so yeah.
And you get to go on your uncle's podcast as well.
Of course, yeah, I wouldn't be able to do that otherwise.
And Ty is in Australia, right?
He is in Australia, yeah.
It's part of Australia.
Brisbane.
So are you ever going to meet then?
Hopefully, yeah.
To meet somewhere in the middle, maybe Dubai or I don't know.
Singapore.
Singapore, there you go. Great stuff. For the listeners, the next film is either going to be Snowtown. Olivia, please don't watch that film. It's dreadful. It's brilliant, but it's dreadful. It's about a real life incident that happened in Australia, in Adelaide. And promise me you won't watch that film.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, right. I'd call it small town horror, I think. Or otherwise, we're going to be doing Groundhog Day at some point. Not me and Olivia, but Olivia, you're welcome to come back on the show. It's only been monthly. It's the only thing. And I've already got a long list of volunteers for the next There might be in a year's time, but I just want to say thank you very much for being on the show. It's been great.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
And have you got anything online or anything you'd like to plug before you go?
If anyone's on Letterboxd, my username's Team Edward from Twilight. My reviews are a bit dumb, but it's fun. Got some fun lists. If you're my age, you might enjoy it. Okay. Follow me on Letterboxd if you're on Letterboxd.
Send me a link and I'll put it in the show notes.
Of course, yeah.
And yeah, just thanks again and good luck with everything. And I hope to actually see you in the future.
I know, yeah, I hope so. Thanks for having me on.
I haven't seen you since about 2017, I think.
Probably, yeah.
All right. So yeah, thanks again and all the best.
Thank you.